Broadcasting live from Business Radio X Studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Learning Insights, featuring learning professionals, improving performance to drive business results.
Welcome to another exciting and informative edition of Learning Insights Radio. I'm your host, Stone Payton, and in the studio with me this morning, as is often the case, is my good buddy and co-host, Mr. Lee Cantor. How you doing, man?
I am doing great. Excited about this show.
This is going to be a fantastic show brought to you, as always, by our good friends over at Training Pros. And in the studio with us this morning as well is also Mr. David Adelman. How you doing, man?
Very good. Good morning, Stone.
So what's happening in training world? What are you busy doing these days?
Well, you know, what we do is we work with Fortune 100 companies to help them find contract folks for positions that they need. And so we're just busy doing that.
Now, isn't there some big powwow coming up before too long where all you guys get together and share best practices and go to classes and that kind of stuff?
I guess you're speaking of the training conference, training 2013 down in Orlando.
Absolutely. Yeah. Let's go with that.
Yeah.
That's exactly what I'm talking about.
That'll be in February. And, we'll have a booth there, and we'll be doing meeting with some folks, doing some interviews, and like you said, going to some seminars and all the good stuff.
Yeah. Well, fun stuff. So who'd you bring with you today, man? Who are we going to get a chance to visit with?
My guest is Doug Dell from Crawford & Company.
Well, welcome to the show, man. We're glad to have you.
Good morning. Thank you very much.
But, you know, this isn't the first time thing for you. I think we have had an opportunity to visit before, probably at one of these conferences. We did like a remote broadcast at one of these things, right?
Exactly. It was a training conference back in February, and I was suffering from a cold, so I'm much better now. Looking forward to it.
Cut to a year later, you're well, and now you're back.
Exactly. It's a long healing process, but I'm there, yeah.
So now, why don't you share with us a little bit about what you guys are doing over there at Crawford & Company?
Okay. Well, first, maybe to just introduce Crawford & Company, we're a 70-year-old Atlanta-based company. I think it's a well-kept secret. We're a public company. We about $1 billion in revenue,
right.
About 9,000 employees, and we're in 70 different countries, so we're all over the place. And what we do primarily is manage claims. So as a claim comes in from, whether it's MetLife or Allstate, and they look to have somebody go out and assess the damage on that claim, that's what we do. Mm-hmm. And then we provide the analysis and go back. And from a training perspective, it's really important for us that we maintain a focus around making sure that the adjusters that are out in the field, whether they be ours or somebody else's, are equipped to do the job properly, to make the proper assessments, to use the software appropriately.
What does properly mean in your words?
Properly means that it's accurate, so and it's fast. You got to realize on the other end of things, you have, take Hurricane Sandy, for example, you have people that have had devastated, and their homes are devastated.
And they're devastated. A large number of them.
A large number, incredibly upset. So you're going in there at that point to try to address what the value of that home is. And so you have to have a lot of empathy around how you do things. But more importantly, you've got to work fast because you're the next step in getting a check to them so they can get their life started again.
Right.
So when I say properly, it's about making sure the claim is complete, making sure that the valuation is accurate. And it all comes back to training. And we've been training people for about 60 years now. The company's 70 years old, but training, I think the training department was about started around 1950 or so.
So they saw the importance of that right away?
It's absolutely critical because what we are is we work with a number of different companies. So they need to know that we have done the right thing and that we've trained the right people. And we've actually developed a broader certification process as well to say, if you go through this, you're going to have the competencies that you need to perform the job.
Right.
So I'm guessing e-learning probably wasn't quite as robust 60 years ago as it is now.
Else.
But how has training and development changed in general and at Crawford & Company over the years, and how would you describe where you are right now?
Well, you know, I think it started out, obviously, with just classroom primarily, but there was also a lot of site visits as well. So traditionally what would have happened is you would have had a classroom, and then you would have said, well, there's a house that had a bad leak. We're going to head out. Check that out.
We're going in a bus.
Exactly. A lot of bus trips. Yeah, exactly. To get out there. And then you'd have a seasoned professional say, this is what you should look for.
Right.
This is how you want to value it. We've moved in a couple different directions, primarily the e-learning component to say, look, you don't have to be in the classroom to do this. So we've done a lot with self-paced learning. But in addition to that, we're pushing a lot on the virtual side, which is to have webcams so you can have, you know, 5 or 6 or 8 different people out in the field but working directly with an adjuster who's, you know.
So the adjuster might be in an office somewhere and then somebody's on the field like with a camera or their phone And then they're seeing the...
It's still more classroom-based, so the adjuster is actually going through the process of this is what you do, but now you can interact and you can pose questions. And, you know, with the different software, you can break off into small groups and say, okay, you two guys handle this fire claim, you two guys handle this water claim, let's get back together and report back out.
So you don't need the buses anymore.
You know, bus rides are fun once in a while, you know, but no, we still try to get out there, obviously, on the field. And I think the other area, when you think about field activity now, is that we're trying to get out there and actually film. Today, I'm missing the opportunity of going and filming a house that had been on had a fire about a couple weeks ago, but we want to go in there, do a complete filming in order that we can build some virtual tours of a burned property.
Right.
And that's going to be really kind of that's going to be a really good tool for us because again, we can chop it up in little pieces and say this is what a kitchen fire looks like. This is what a bathroom fire looks like. This is what happens to the exterior of the home. And that's going to be really important because you just can reuse it and reuse it and reuse it.
Now, is one of the challenges, like, you see a house and superficially it may look okay, but, like, you know, in the foundation or there could be things that you can't see with the naked eye? Like, is that the hardest part to train?
It is. I mean, I think you have a lot of tools now. Like, one of the very cool tools, is infrared photographs. So, you know, you look at a house and the wall looks dry from the exterior.
Right.
But then with the infrared picture, you can say, well, no, it's damp, which means that there's a problem. And there's somewhere there's a leak.
But, like, to the naked eye, it wouldn't look like there's a problem.
Exactly. So, you know, as you look at the businesses getting much more sophisticated, you know, the use of drones, for example, like instead of climbing a roof that might be, you know, 40 or 50 feet up, now they can actually use a drone that can go up there, it can take a picture of the roof, it can size the roof, so they never have to do that.
So private companies have drones?
Drones that fit in suitcases, yeah, they're pretty
really?
Cool, yeah. Yeah, so it's like a miniature, it's like a little plane, you know, airplane kind of thing.
Right, but it has a camera, so you can see the top.
It's great. Yeah,
that's awesome.
So these guys go up and they'll photograph and then they'll overlay measurements on top of that. And then if you say, hey, can you guys zoom in on that damage right there? It's done.
So all that virtual simulation that my kid's playing on his computer is going to pay off.
It's going to pay off hugely. Yeah, I think in that area, you know, that's one area where we haven't pushed enough. But when you think about, you know, kids that are 15 or whatever, they're used to network gaming. They're used to selecting the people they're going to work with based upon their skill set. So, you know, depending upon what the mission is, you're going to say, I want this guy because he's better at it, right? And we haven't gotten there with training yet, but that's what's going to happen in the future.
So you see that's a progression.
Network training is what it's going to be about, I think, in the future. Yeah, because that way, right now you're seeing it informally where, you know, if someone has a question, they may tweet out a question saying, hey, I don't know what kind of, you know, ceiling tile this is. Can you help me with that?
Right.
And you'll get a response. But, you know, in the future with a more of a network game, you might say, I only want tile guys to be on my team. So when I have that conversation, we're going to know what we're talking about.
And that way you can get the best answer from amongst the tile guys.
Exactly.
No, I think that technology, it really lends itself to getting expert consultation, right? You can you look at something, you say, hey, Joe, I know you really know about this stuff. What do you think? Is there some of that happening now?
Well, I mean, right now I don't think it's formalized yet. That's the problem is that, you know, when you think about gaming, you've actually rated an individual. They have stature in the game.
Right.
And that's something that it's informal to say, hey, you know, the best guy to call for roofing or the best guy to call for flooring. But the fact is that it's not like there's a database
yet. So you need some gamification to give people badges and things like that. So you know that guy really is the best guy, not just because Bob says so.
Exactly.
Could be his cousin.
Yeah, and I think that's really where it will go in the future because then it no longer is a regional issue as well.
Right, you know, because you can get the best flooring guy. Could be the best flooring guy who could live in Wichita. It doesn't matter.
Exactly. And, you know, the flip side of that, too, is when you think about, like, damage to properties. Like, you know, an ice dam is not something you'd ever hear about down here, but it's very common up north, you know.
Right.
So, but if you were presented with something like that, you wouldn't want to call your local buddies in Atlanta.
Right,
you'd
that wouldn't
say,
help you. The guy who's seen one.
I need
life,
the guy,
right?
And, you know, I need the guy in Corinth, Vermont, to help me out because this guy's seen a lot
day,
of that. Yeah,
right.
Exactly.
Now, did you get any resistance early on as you were unveiling e-learning to this population? And if so, how did you mitigate that or meet that resistance?
Well, you know, I think with learning, you can break it into a couple pieces. You know, the courses that they can self-select into, you're going to see some resistance. If I don't have to do it, I'm not going to do it.
Right.
You know? But when you get to compliance training, I mean, things like ethics and fraud, which is a requirement every single year, then you have to struggle through and just get it done. So, and then on the leadership development side, we have a lot of leadership development courses. And in that instance, you know, it's more likely that I might want to do it for my self-development. So I think over time, people just gravitate to the fact, okay, this is what it's going to be.
Right.
I'm not going to see a classroom. I'm not going to be invited to a classroom session. So if I want to do it, I better do it now.
Now, is that how you do the leadership? Like anybody could do this, or you're chosen to take part?
Leadership, we've got a number of different flavors of leadership. So the leadership online courses would be open up to any manager. So they're generally about 8 different competencies that we focus on. And so they have a series of maybe 5 or 8 courses per competency they can work on.
Mm-hmm.
Another aspect of leadership is mentoring, that we're implementing a global mentoring program. And that's going to be more of a let's assign so-and-so to this and
so
make
you're
sure
the matchmaker?
I'm not I put the design together. I'm not going to be the matchmaker.
Right.
But,
not
you, know,
you yourself, but you as the company are...
Yeah, absolutely.
So it's not like somebody saying, can I work with you as my mentor or something like that? They're not choosing.
There's more structure to it because I think it goes back to skills and competencies. Well, what are you trying to accomplish, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then let's make sure we match you not with a buddy, but we match you with the guy that's got the skills that he can share with you.
Right, that's going to fill the gaps, right?
And the other thing is that traditionally it's been, within your own organization that you're like, hey, I know this guy, so I'll go to him instead of saying, well, you know what, how about we just break that silo? We'll find a guy in the UK, you can talk to him.
Right.
And that way you can begin to get a better breadth of what's going on in the company. You can also have a greater experience, and you know, might learn something about the UK that you didn't know before.
Sure.
So I got to believe there's plenty of value for a mentee in these relationships, but I suspect there's value for being a mentor as well. Yeah, can you speak to that a little bit?
I think that you're looking at your the bench strength of the organization, and you're saying, okay, I'm meeting people I've never met before who are rather competent in certain areas, and we're going to build up some other skill sets. I'm looking at, the next group that may lead this organization.
Right.
So I think there's a huge upside for the mentor. I think also the mentor can hone their skills as well in terms of the mentee, asking them questions they don't have answers to.
Right.
And it may, force them to go out and, meet some other people.
Now, have you ever been a mentor or mentee before?
Not yet. I'm waiting for
the
invitation.
For the call,
yeah, exactly. Like I said, I'm not the matchmaker.
You're available, though.
Right? I am available, yeah, exactly.
So, David, are you seeing this as a trend? Are more and more organizations at least entertain the idea of having a formalized, structured mentoring program?
Absolutely, yeah. In fact, I've put a couple together for example, Merck & Company when I was in sales training there. Both mentors in the terms of in your onboarding process when you're starting a role, having somebody who's there to guide you and somebody who you can talk to that's outside of the person that you report to. So that opens that up a little bit.
So that's important to have somebody that's outside the formal reporting structure.
I believe so, yeah. It makes it a little bit easier on the relationship. And then the other type of mentor is somebody who's there as kind of like a subject matter expert when you have a specific need that you can go to that person and work with them.
Now, is there any mistake you see people making in this area?
Well, the main thing is you have to make sure that the mentors are willing to be a mentor and that you do some prep time.
So you're not like forcing them to do something they don't want to do?
You can't force that relationship. They have to be really eager and willing
to
do it.
They have to be invested and really kind of go all in on this. They can't just kind of, I'll do it, and then not return their calls or not jump on emails.
Exactly. And you have to do some prep time with them, some training ahead of time so they understand the mentor-mentee relationship.
So have you had a mentor, Lee?
No. Nobody formal like that.
I'm available. I'm Doug and I are both on the market.
Exactly.
I'm going to call Doug. He said he raised his hand.
But it wasn't a formalized program, but I've been extremely blessed in that I could definitely point to 2 folks that I feel like have been fantastic mentors for me. And if you were to catch me doing something right, I mean, I can tell you exactly where it came from, which one of them, how and why, the circumstance. I had tremendous impact on my life. Absolutely. So, Doug, what's the backstory, man? How did you get into this line of work?
Well, spent a lot of time in marketing, and along the way, a colleague of mine approached me and said, hey, can you help me write a business plan for a company that I'm buying, which is a learning company, and it was K-12, so I did, and I kind of really liked it a lot. And then along the way, he said, can you sit in a couple meetings with me, which I did, and eventually he said, why don't you come along, and so I did. So that was about 12 years ago. But I found my way more into corporate training, which is, an area that's closer, more near to dear to me. And along the way, I've been actually with the University of Phoenix teaching graduate-level marketing for probably the last 10 or 12 years.
So keeping your fingers in marketing.
You know,
once you get that marketing bug, it's hard to kind of give that up.
It is, but the other side of it is that you need to hear from the audience too. And as you are teaching, particularly online, that's the
right.
You can't hide that stuff. It either works or it doesn't.
Is there a lot of training? And when people are moving from that, like you were saying earlier, that when it was kind of more face-to-face presentation style training to now online, and that's a different skill set, isn't it?
It's a very different skill set and often what you see is that people that are very good in classroom,
they think like, oh, just set up the webcam and off I go, and it's not the same.
It doesn't transfer well at all, and partly because the interactions are different, and mm-hmm. that you have to, and if you think about it from a college standpoint, for example, like if you are in a lecture hall, right, and you've got some marquee talent up front, and they're right. they're talking to 300 students. Fact is the student will never engage with that individual,
right.
Never, ever, maybe one mm-hmm. question. Now, in an online environment where it's going to be much smaller, you might have maybe 20 in the class, you're going to see engagement to the level of probably over 5 weeks, maybe 1,000 different transactions between either the faculty and the student or the student and student. But the
right.
point is that they're much more engaged. They have to be, or they just won't pass.
Right.
Because, I mean, part of your grade is based upon participation and attendance. So.
Mm-hmm.
It's no longer I can sit back and fall asleep.
So now when you're doing your work with the University of Phoenix, is that an online, or is that there's an in-person part of it, or it's strictly online?
It's strictly online. Pure play online is what it is. I always laugh because I never met him as far as the being hired and
right.
in terms of the relationship. But they're really a great organization. In fact, I was out there about 2 months ago in Phoenix, and when you look at the next level of online training, that's what it is, and they're doing a lot with virtual. So within their classroom structure, they're able to really broadcast out, high-level video out to many different locations. They're using the entire interior of the walls. They can project images. They can edit images on the wall itself, and then it uploads directly into the student files. So the capabilities that they have are just really quite astounding.
So that's probably those things are probably transferring well to your work at Crawford. You can take a lot from that.
Exactly.
Now, do you see it trickling down yet into, the public schools? Because it seems like, from a corporate standpoint, that kind of learning is just becoming more and more prevalent, but it isn't kind of trickling down to elementary schools or middle schools or high schools yet, even though, they're still teaching the old way of somebody standing in front of the room presenting.
I think you see technology on two fronts in the schools. You have the smart boards, which are more prevalent now,
right.
so they can interact with using the internet, basically. And then I think the second thing is that when you have to make up a course, like Georgia Online offers courses online as well. So
mm-hmm.
I think those are two aspects of it. But what's more interesting from a business perspective is that take a private school. Private school, maybe they can fit 1,000 students. That's it. So once they max. They have
right.
no more capability.
Right. It's just physically there's not the space.
Exactly. So, but if they were to offer an online program, they might say, well, look, we can do kids in, we can do a morning session. They go home. They go online in the afternoon and vice versa. You might be able to bring that capacity
right.
up to 1,500.
Right. Right.
Double, exactly. So that's the kind of capability that I think online can bring to more of a K-12 structure that hasn't been, considered yet.
Mm-hmm.
So, David, is this trend toward e-learning and doing the webinars and what these guys are describing, is that being reflected in your recruiting and the deployment that you guys are doing at Training Pros, or is that on the horizon to look for that kind of talent that can deliver training on those platforms as well, or are you already doing that?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Cost is always a big factor in training, right? And bring people into the classroom takes, obviously there's expense with airfare
sure.
and so forth. With e-learning, you can get that content across and you can check them on that knowledge base and you can save classroom time for actual application, role play, practice, those kind of things that you need to do in person. So it's a great way to get that information across and cut the expense, quite honestly.
So with all of the information that is being generated, just in general, worldwide, I mean, my kid gets on Google and finds out things that, it would have taken me a week in the library to find. It's got to be happening inside all these companies as well. How do you get your arms around, organize, and make that information really accessible for your folks? Is there some sort of structured, I don't even know what to call it, library effort for all this information you guys
right.
are generating?
Right, the curator becomes much
yeah,
more important
yeah.
in this
yeah.
role,
yeah.
right?
Yeah, I think that you're going to see, I don't know what they're going to call it, maybe a data scientist, but that issue of being able to vet content for its accuracy, for its currency, for whether or not it's going to meet the competency that's required is really going to be a future thing in organizations, I think. The other thing is kind of getting your arms around how much there is, and then also evaluating, validating whether someone's taken it or not. So getting your arms around it, I mean, it's just there's just so much out there right now. How do you choose? And so you look at things that there's a term called MOOC, which is a modern open?
Stone always talks about
massive
this.
Massive
online open courseware. Mm-hmm. So essentially what you have there is you have universities that finally said, hey, we're going to turn the camera on the classroom, and we're going to offer it to people outside.
Right.
And as you see more of that, that's very qualified. That's very good content there. So that's an evaluate, a very important source of information for people, whether in the industry or they're in school.
Right, sure.
So that's happening right now. But the other half is how do you measure it? And so this is where you know, traditional learning management system just isn't designed for that. If the course is not in the learning management system, it's not going to count it. And you're seeing, apps like Tin Can and others that are offering a means for you to capture any learning activity that may have happened. I spoke to Dave, and I talked about, network training of some kind. That might be validated as okay. I'm gonna put that in as a training record essentially for me.
Uh-huh.
Or I took a course online from Stanford or whatever. I'm gonna put that in as a training record. So the capability of tracking things that you're doing outside of the norm or the more formal structured courses is really what the future is going to be about, I think.
Right, that's kind of game changing because like if I go to Harvard, I get a piece of paper that says I went to Harvard. But now in today's world, like you said, I can take a class from Harvard, I can take a class from Stanford, I can take a class from University of Pennsylvania, I can take a class from University of Phoenix, and now I've cobbled together hundreds of courses through the years.
Yep.
Now, as an employer, is that more attractive to you if I have proof of completion and skill and accomplishment of this 100 random classes or this one degree from Harvard?
Yeah, I think the thing is assessment. So if you were assessed on all those courses, I say you have the competency. If you weren't properly assessed, then no, you basically audited the course. But, when you think about they used textbooks, 20 years ago, 30 years ago, here's your one textbook. Okay, everything that you're going to learn about
this stuff is in
this book, right?
So memorize this book and you're good to go.
Exactly. But today, if you look at University of Phoenix, they will cobble together from maybe 5 or 10 or 15 texts into
best,
an e-text.
Right?
Exactly.
So that's better for me as the learner.
Exactly.
I'm getting the best of the best.
So effectively, you're doing exactly what you just talked about, which is I'm going out to different schools. I'm going to pick and choose what I take, but it's going to formalize itself into a curriculum.
Right. And that's if the people, if everybody says that the importance of being a lifelong learner is really true, mm-hmm. does it matter if I'm taking this whole random classes that are, as long as it's on point and I'm learning and I'm actually competent in it? Does that matter, or does it matter that I graduated with the degree from this school?
Exactly.
I mean, you have, as an employer, you decide what's more important.
Well, the thing is also you have to look at, the earlier point about your kids. Your kids are going to go online. They want 2 minutes to solve the problem, right?
Right.
So they don't need 4 years to do it. They're just looking for the 2 minutes, right? And so we have to begin to think that way about learning as well, which is that, it doesn't have to be linear. It can be very, very targeted on key needs at the time. And it kind of leads in the whole performance support. When I'm in the field, what am I going to do? I don't know if I can recognize that shingle. What is it?
Right.
Boom, it's done.
And you find the expert that knows. You get help. They mentor you through that situation. Now you have the knowledge, so next time you can recognize it. I mean, that's how the learning takes place.
Exactly.
And it's very fluid. It's not something they sat and learned in a classroom and looked at a slide.
Yeah. Exactly. So, what's happening here is that we're formalizing the informal is really what it is.
You're trying to. I think corporations are leading the way in terms of just education in general. I mean, you guys have to adjust so quickly because the marketplace is changing and you're a global company. What's happening, you have to kind of gather all that knowledge from all over the world and be able to sort through it and what's true, what's not true, how do we disseminate the good, and how do we eliminate the bad?
Exactly. And the other thing is that, now we all have a device to do that, with your phone.
Right,
you can take video.
Phone.
Exactly. There's so much you can do as far as just uploading, hey, I just saw this, I was out in the field, really kind of interesting. either I know what it is, like I identify it, or I'm asking someone else to do that. But that becomes a permanent element, a training element, if you think
about
it.
Right. Well, you're carrying your computer with you wherever you go in your pocket.
Yep.
Now, are you having a challenge, like, generationally? You know, I'm sure the younger generation is quickly, you know, comfortable in this environment. Are you having trouble kind of disseminating this information to the older generation?
You know, it's I think that people adapt pretty well. I mean, our one of our lead trainers is I won't say how old he is, but he's...
Seasoned.
He's quite a season, but he is the first one to jump all over the video. So we're doing a lot with video right now, and he's excited about that. And, you know, he couldn't tell you how to produce it, but he certainly can provide the content that's needed. So I'm like, hey, well, you give us the images, you give us the narration, we'll figure out how to put it online. So he's thrilled about that. So I think people can engage. The challenge that we see, like we've been testing a lot of iPads in the field, and the challenge has been connectivity. So, you know, you don't think about that when you're
wireless,
in a big city.
Right.
But when you, at Sandy, when everything gets knocked out, there's no internet. So guess what? It's useless, you know. So because we have to interact with databases, we can't do that. And the screens are kind of small. So our guys spend a lot of time sketching. And so if they can't sketch on a smaller screen, so it's a problem for them as well. So those things, it's not so much about a generational issue. It's simply just the geography and where I am right now. I can't get to what I need to do the job.
I want to talk a little bit more about mobile and learning in your pocket and that kind of thing. And this is the portion of the program where we talk about me and my specific challenges. Because let me tell you what's happening right now. Some people are listening in right now on an app like TuneIn. And they can go on an Android phone and they can listen to this conversation. Some people are listening in on our website if they have the iPhone. But like the other day, Kelly and I, my youngest, we were on her iPhone and she could hear it and it would play and it was great. I couldn't get that part of the web to play on my Android. Are you guys wrestling with format issues? And if so, what have you learned that maybe you could share with us?
It's a huge issue because there is really no – the common denominator right now appears to be HTML5 that will play on both systems.
Right.
But the fact is that it still doesn't function properly on a browser – for certain browsers. So the point is that it's still a work in progress is what it is. And, you know, you look at like SCORM. SCORM was something that took a long time to develop. But once it was standardized, it was a means to say we can trade courses.
Right.
We're not there yet on the mobile front, so we're kind of feeling our way. The beauty of it is that we're not still the majority of people are desktop. They're still taking things in front of a larger screen, a laptop.
Mm-hmm.
So we have time right now. And the second thing is that as mobile goes, people are also willing to accept less. So in other words, it can be shorter. The video doesn't have to be as good. So for that reason, I'm willing to tolerate that. But you're right. There's no standard right now that's going to allow everybody to access everything, and it's a matter of testing before you push anything out. You got to test it on a bunch of browsers. You got to test it on a bunch of appliances. You got to look at the sizing and say, does it make sense or is it just too small?
Right.
You know, because a lot of people say, oh, they can get to my website on the phone. Well, yeah, they can get to the website, but
they can't
see it.
They can't do anything with it.
Right. But I bet video has been fantastic because video is a very engaging medium. Now, I personally find it very unforgiving when I've seen myself on video, but that aside, video can be very engaging. Is that really, do you feel like that's helped you with engagement?
Video is something that we're going to work a lot more on, and particularly now with HD, because HD allows for us to take an individual frame. And so that frame, then we can zoom in. We can say, here's where the fire began, and you can really look at that. So, you know, you take video, it's nice. From an entertainment standpoint, I might sit back and watch the whole thing, and I've learned just narration and all. But for us, it's about freeze framing. It's about going in deep. It's about being able to say, see that. That's the cause and origin
not
right
good.
There.
Right. And you can show it and share it and learn from it.
And the quality of you know the cameras right now just they're astounding.
No, your phone
Absolutely
is
astounding.
Like as good as like the greatest camera from 5 years ago.
Exactly. So we're doing more with video, and we're going to need to continue to do that because one, it allows for us to insert that into a course. It allows for small snippets, learning snippets, and it allows for us to just push out to as many people as needed.
What's the kind of the time? People watch videos. What do you try to shoot for?
If you 5 to 7 minutes is really where we are, and that's a little bit of structure too. We kind of have
a formatted template that you kind of just plug and play the different concepts.
It's kind of bumpers. You get a bumper in the front says this is brought to you by. These are the learning objectives. What you're going to see. You go through a couple a couple different elements of it, and then on the back end, here's what you learned. What we've been building as far as a video though is. Two other aspects to it. So they're really designed for desktop, but what we've done is we've incorporated downloadable PDFs. So they have kind of a summary of what they just saw with images and in the text, and then they also can download it to a phone as well. So we're going to put it in both Droid and Apple format.
So if you were speaking to your folks internally at Crawford & Company right now, and you may very well be, what advice, if any, would you share with them to help them get full measure, capitalize fully on all of these resources that are available to them in terms of professional development?
This is your perfect world.
That's
right. Because you are the big shot in e-learning. So.
Well, I think that the answer is that you go for 80%. Okay, if you try to perfect everything and have everything buttoned down, it'll take a long time to you know, happen. But if you go for 80%, say, look, you know, I got my phone, I can take a picture of this right now, it's going to be good enough, it's going to get to the point we can refine it. And that's like how the web developed. It's iterative. You know, you start out with a single web page, you build from there.
So you're never done.
You're never done, exactly. And it's only going to get better. And one thing's for sure, you probably want to repeat it a couple of years from now because it's going to be a whole lot better than it was.
So what's next for you? Where are you going to invest your energy in the coming months, you think?
I think that the two areas that we want to focus on, obviously the video, we want to continue to build that out. I think gaming is huge as well. And so I've done a lot of work with that in the past. We're doing more at Crawford right now. And I think the level of gaming we want to move toward is we're not there for network yet because network requires a kind of an open network approach. We're still very much, you know, single player type things, but we want to move much more towards simulation. So we're working with a couple companies right now to do that.
That's exciting.
We got to have you back. We want like a gamification simulation report in a few months. I think that, don't you think that'd make for a fantastic conversation? David, you up for that?
Yep, absolutely.
All right. Yep. Well, it's been an absolute pleasure having you in the studio, man. Thoroughly enjoyed it. Very insightful, very informative, and quite sincere. I think we got to have
and
you back.
What's the website for where you're at?
Go to kmcondemand.com, which is our main page for accessing our training.
Fantastic. Well, until next time, this is Stone Payton for Lee Cantor. Our guests this morning, David Edelman and Doug Dell. Doug Dell with Crawford & Company. And everyone here at the Business Radio X family saying we'll see you next week on Learning Insights. Although we stout.